The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
And we're live here in Merrick, New York for WGBB Sports Talk New York here on this Sunday evening, October 5th. 2025. I'm Andy Sukoff here with you for the next hour, and you can follow the show on X at WGBB Sports Talk. You can listen to past episodes on Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast at WGBB New York. You can find it there. We're going to jump right into things because there's a lot going on in New York today, and none of it was good. Every team is down bad today, and we're going to start with my football team, the New York Jets. Just another gutless loss, 0-5 on the season. And joining me to talk about this game, he was at the stadium today for the Daily News, Antoine Staley. Antoine, thank you for taking the time tonight.
All right, good to be with you.
Of course. So, you know, we'll jump right in. You know, they're playing the Cowboys today, and they really needed a win. Going in at 0-4 and really having been outmatched in many of the games they played, including looking pretty lifeless against the Miami Dolphins on Monday night. And they go out and they lay another egg against the Cowboys today, falling 37-22, and it wasn't even that close.
No, it was not. I mean, to be honest with you, that, like, I felt like it was a close game until the Breece Hall fumble. I felt like that was the backbreaker. And it's been like, this was the same like all year long with the Jets. It seemed like it's been one play that you can look towards in a game and you say, you know what, that's the play that really changed the game. And this one, it was definitely the Breece Hall fumble last week against the Dolphins. It was the Braylon Allen fumble right near the goal line. The Jets were also in the red zone. It was Breece Hall and the fumble in there. He said he had a stinger, but, you know, it really changed the complexion of the game because, you know, the Cowboys ended up scoring after that. And then they got another touchdown before halftime. And that, you know, at that point when it's 24-3, you just feel like, you know, especially considering that the Jets have struggled to score points at times this year, you know, it really wasn't any way they were coming back in that game, especially against a prolific offense like the Cowboys. They kind of let the gas off the pedal a little bit in the second half. I think the Bills did that in week two as well. But, you know, clearly they had the game in hand and, you know, probably could have scored 45-50 points on the Jets if they really wanted to.
Yeah, and I saw going into the game that the Cowboys were only 1.5-point favorites, and I'm not a handicapper by any stretch of the imagination, but watching how the Cowboys did look against a Packers defense last week that the Packers have really played well this year, especially once they added Micah Parsons, and knowing and seeing what the Jets defense has done this season, which really hasn't been good. I was actually surprised that the spread was as low as it was. I figured the Cowboys would probably be closer to a touchdown favorite. And that, so I know that, you know, sometimes like home points do change things, but 1.5 seemed like a little bit of a,
Well, I was going to say, the Jets were the favorite when kickoff started because they switched because the Cowboys had four offensive linemen out, like, in their lineup, like, four of them. This is very reminiscent of the Tampa game where, you know, the Jets ended up having one sack the entire game on Baker Mayfield. They only had one sack against the Cowboys. And basically that was just when Dak gave up, like, when he was trying to keep the ball in bounds and the clock running. That's the only reason they had a sack. Other than that, like, they were not able to get a consistent pressure on Dak Prescott, especially even with four offensive linemen out. Like, it's just mind blowing, like, how this pass rush is just really non-existent and how bad the defense has played. You know, you could, like I said, you could talk about a lot of different things with the Jets and, you know, the problems that they have, but one thing that really boggles my mind is how badly this defense has, you know, played this year. We're talking about a unit that's finished in the top the last 3 years previous to this year, and now I'm talking about one of the worst units in football, especially considering they're giving up over 30 points per game.
And is that an indictment on Steve Wilks and the job that he's performed thus far? That you have a team that brought back a lot of the players from last year, guys like Quinn and Quincy Williams, though he didn't play today, Jamie Sherwood, Sauce Gardner, and then coming off of his contract extension. They brought back a lot of these guys on defense, and it's night and day what they've done from the Robert Saleh, Jeff Ulbrich line to now what they're doing under Aaron Glenn and Steve Wilks here this season.
Yeah, I'll say a few things. One, yeah, I mean, Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's a little bit of an indictment on Steve Wilkes, too, just because he returned 8 starters to a unit that, you know, finished in the top 5 last year. However, I will say this, too, like, you know, the Jets, it's not like the Jets' defense was great late last year after they fought solid, so you also have to keep that in mind, too, as well. And also, it's a new scheme there. Players are starting to, kind of trying to get adjusted to it. And then Sherwood has not performed, I don't think, up to, you know, I don't think really anybody, you know, has performed up to, you know, expectation this year. I think Quentin has been good, but I think a lot of teams have been double-teaming him to the point where he hasn't been able to generate a lot of pass rush. He really doesn't have a lot of help. Jermaine Johnson's been out. Will McDonald hasn't necessarily played as well as he did a year ago, too, as well. The linebacking core has struggled at times as well. And then you look at the secondary, too, as well. I mean, even Sauce, somebody that, you know, got paid a lot of money in the offseason, you know, he's had his, you know, ups and downs, too, as well. But, you know, you saw the big play to George Pickens, too, as well. And, you know, he hasn't necessarily played well, too. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of different reasons why they're not performing really well. But, you know, I think you have to look at Steve Wilson, just, you know, it seems like the players are just not in position, you know, at times. It seems like it's just a lot of wide open wide receivers, which you typically don't see in the NFL. You typically see a lot in college, but, you know, I can pinpoint probably like 5 or 6 times where receivers is running wide open the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and one of the things that blows my mind on this is the fact that through 5 games, they have no takeaways, not an interception,
yeah,
not a fumble recovery.
First team in NFL history.
And I know that the game is tailored more towards offense, but you would think you would dumb luck your way into an interception. You know, ball gets tipped up in the air and you come down in your hands, or ball gets knocked loose and you fall on it, which somehow the Jets never managed to do. Like, all their fumbles go the other way, and anytime they force a fumble, it just falls back in the offense's hands. It's incredible how their ball luck is just non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it's luck, I think, you know, just especially when you talk about fumbles. But, you know, also you got to be able to create turnovers. And that's something they have not been able to do. Like, that was a bit of a problem last year, too. Like, even going back in years prior, like, I don't think they necessarily created a lot of turnovers, too, as well. And, you know, I think their defense was good, but that's a tale of an elite defense. Can you create turnovers? Can you force them? Can you recover them? And that's something the Jets have not been able to do. It's just unfortunate this year where, you know, they haven't been able to follow any kind of loose balls or even, you know, get pressure on the quarterback or do much of anything right defensively, to be honest with you. Even the tackle has been horrific too as well. So we hadn't even talked about that.
Yeah, no, it's like one thing after another. And when you're giving up 30 points a game, that's going to be a contributing factor if you're not playing the ball very well.
Yeah, margin for error is slim. Like, you give it up 30 points a game, you better be able to have a prolific offense, and that's something the Jets do not have.
Yeah, and I will say for the offense, while they do not score points at that same clip as their defense is giving up, they also don't give the ball away all that often. I guess they've been fumbling, but you don't really see Fields throwing too many interceptions. And, like, he's been able to protect the ball himself a little bit better. But, you know, you still want to see the offense, you know, get in the end zone. That's kind of a big one.
Yeah, I would say this, too. Like, I think a lot of it, I mean, I think a lot of the reason is because they've been conservative as far as the play calling. You know, it was the fourth down play there. I mean, obviously you're getting your brains beat in early in the game. And, you know, you bring Nick Folk out there for the field goal. I mean, you're literally putting lipstick on the pig at that point. I mean, why not just go for it? I mean, you already scored in the game. I mean, what's going to happen? Like, you know, got to go for it out or whatever, or, you know, have to punt or the Cowboys take over. Like, so, yeah, for me, like, yeah, I just feel like the play call has been very conservative. So yeah, you can look at it like that where they're not turning the ball over, but when you're getting beat down like that in games, and I guess, you know, fourth quarter, they start to throw the ball a little bit more and, you know, they got a couple of garbage time touchdowns, but at that point, the game was already over. I mean, the Cowboys kind of, like I say, let their foot off the gas a little bit and, you know, they knew they were going to win the game. So they just, you know, kind of play really soft zone coverage and allowed the Jets to catch everything that was in front of them. So, yeah, it's the passing, Justin Fields' passing stats are a little bit inflated because of that. So the same thing kind of happened, you know, in other games this year, too. If you talk about Tampa when Tyrod Taylor was playing, it just happened to be that they were able to get back in that game.
And we're talking with Antoine Staley from the Daily News. And that's one of my, like, when they brought in Justin Fields in the offseason, that was something that really concerned me. Is like watching him play with Chicago, watching him play with the Steelers, you know what he can do with his legs. He's an incredibly mobile quarterback and can make plays happen with his legs. But when it comes time to make plays with his arm and get the ball down the field, throwing the ball, I never really saw it. And I think we're seeing it now that we're not seeing it in the first three quarters, but then once you're down by 20 and like you said, once the defense is back off, it makes it look a little bit better than it is. But where are those plays coming in the first three quarters when they're playing much tighter up on the receiver? Like, that's what I want to see from Justin Fields.
I will defend him in this sense. The offensive line was not good today. Like, it was just not good. I mean, he let up like five sacks, I believe. It's just, you know, some plays the defenders were just getting in. They made the Cowboys' defense look much better than what it was. Like, they made it look like one of the best defenses in the league. I mean, they were just getting after the field there. Sometimes he didn't have time to throw the ball, but the other times he did hold the ball too long, which has been a problem with Justin Fields too as well. Like, this is obviously a year for evaluation to him and just everybody else in the organization. But yeah, you definitely want to see him get the ball out a little bit quicker than, you know, he has. I mean, he hasn't been able to do that, you know, whether with the Bears or the Steelers and now the Jets too as well. So yeah, he definitely has to improve on that. But the offensive line did him no favors today. I think they did a very poor job. Especially if you go back and watch the tape too as well. I feel like, struggled. I feel like John Simpson also struggled with some penalties too as well. Just everybody, the offensive line as a whole, really struggled in the pass protection.
Yeah, I want to talk about the penalties a little bit because, again, just like on Monday night against the Dolphins where it seemed like they were getting penalized for breathing, they had another game today where they had double-digit penalties, almost, I think it was like 75 yards of penalties. And I saw at one point the Cowboys had taken more penalties for more yards than the Jets had, but every Jets penalty seemed to be just that much more crushing because it came at the worst possible time to take a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, when you're losing, then, yeah, I mean, you have no margin for error. At least the Cowboys were winning, so, I mean, obviously you don't want to commit a penalty at all, but when you're winning by double digits, then, you know, it's not really that big of a deal, depending on the severity of the penalty, but every little penalty when you're down or a team like the Jets, who, again, like, it's not really a good football team and also, again, have a small margin for error, you make those small penalties really add up, and I think you've seen that throughout the course of the season, all year in the first five games.
Yeah, and one of the things you had just mentioned was the offensive line struggling in pass protection. If you're an opposing defensive coordinator and you see on tape that the Jets are struggling when teams are sending four and five, wouldn't it make sense to just do that every play and dare Fields to beat his defense that way rather than
That's what they were doing. That's exactly what the Cowboys were doing. Like, they were sending them pressure like in different ways all game. And then, you know, of course, with him holding on to the ball too long, or again, if they're able to get in there and attack him, then he's going to want to run. So I think the book on him has always been like, force him to run. If you can keep him in front of him, then he can make a mistake there, a turnover, fumble, interception, whatever the case may be. So I think that's been the book on Justin Fields basically since the end of the league. You know, force him. Hopefully he doesn't beat you with his legs, but if you can keep him, you can stay in front of him, then you can force some mistakes there or some sacks or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I will give offensive coordinator Tanner Engstrom some credit. You know, in the beginning of the game, the run game was pretty effective. Breece Hall averaged 8 yards a carry. Went over 100 yards, and unfortunately the fumble dampens the impact he was having on that game. But we are seeing at least the run game is somewhat effective, like getting them down the field. It's just a matter of needing to finish. Is that like that's something that they should be able to build on, even though the points aren't necessarily coming. Like, that eventually someone's going to hold on to the ball going over the goal line.
Yeah, I mean, that's a positive, but again, like, when you're losing 24-3 at halftime, then it doesn't really matter how well you run the football.
That is true.
Like, cause you're gonna have to throw it to win it. Like, so it's just kind of like, okay, they're running the ball, like, they run for 100 whatever yards they did, but you still lost by, you know, double digits. And I think people are comfortable, like, not like the Eagles. Like, I think the Eagles have a, you know, obviously they're a better team, but, you know, when they do it, like, they're usually up and they want to run the ball and they want to establish a physical presence. The Jets do it, you know, because I feel like that's their best course of offense. And you can't, it's hard to win that way when your best course of offense is ground and pound. And yeah, like, they had some success with it. I think they're doing a good job with it. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to pass the ball. If you can't pass the ball, you're not going to win many games. And that's kind of where we are with the Jets right now as we head into them going to London against the Broncos next week.
Yeah, no, I feel so bad for the people of the United Kingdom that are going to have to see that. I mean that in the nicest way possible. Because obviously I want, like, as a Jets fan, I want to see them win. But the Broncos are going to be coming in of a huge win against the Eagles, and they're going to be coming in with some confidence, and that's staring 0-6 in the face.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, I had them, like, I knew it would be a struggle early on in the season. I really did, because the schedule makers did them no favors. I mean, you end up having them against three teams that made the playoffs last year. You know, obviously a division rival in Miami, which is never easy, you know, thing. The Jets hadn't won there since 2014. And then, oh, yeah, you come on to Dallas, which, you know, not a great team, but somebody that can put up a point of points. And then now you got to go to London to play the Broncos, a team that's, you know, starting to get a lot more confidence. And, oh, yeah, like after that, you got Carolina, who, you know, not a great team there, but they did beat the team that you could not beat in the Dolphins. So, yeah, they got to figure out this really quickly. I mean, you know, you have a few games before the bye week. You got, you know, Denver. You got, you know, obviously Cincinnati and Carolina. Like, you need to try to get a win and get some momentum. And also, you know, keep the fan base off your back. I know Darren Glenn has talked about how, you know, what happened in Detroit. And, you know, I agree. Like, he needs to have some patience, but, again, understanding where you are, like, in the New York market, fans don't necessarily have a lot of patience. And then on top of that, it's been 15 years since the Jets have made the playoffs. So you got a lot of angry people there. You know, there's a lot of boos there already. A lot of ton of Cowboy fans that were already in the building, and the Jet fans that were already there were booing and, you know, not happy about what they've seen. So, yeah, they got to get this, you know, you got to give them some hope, you know, in the next few weeks. That's for sure.
Absolutely, as we're talking with Antoine Taylor from the Daily News, you could hear the Let's Go Cowboys chants loud and clear watching it on TV today. I mean, what, from your vantage point, like, what was the splits in terms of Jets fans and Cowboys fans there?
I probably would say it was about 45% Cowboys fans. So, yeah, it was a lot of them. And, you know, probably after halftime, then most of the Jets fans left. Like, you know, they didn't come back after halftime. So it was nothing but Cowboy fans there in that second half. And that's why I think you heard that, you know, the Let's Go Cowboys chants and, you know, some other things that they were saying. But, yeah, it was a ton of Cowboys fans. Just like it was a ton of Bills fans week two when they played in MetLife. Just like it was a ton of Steelers fans there in week one too as well. So you have really three really good fan bases that came to MetLife and, you know, pretty much took over your stadium.
Yeah, no, and like it's frustrating because, like you said, it's been 15 years since they've gone to the playoffs. It's been 10 years since they've had a winning season. Jets fans are frustrated. We're ready for something to change, and to see this team make progress and take those strides to get to that next level of not being a bottom feeder. And it seems like every year, no matter what personnel changes, no matter the coach, no matter the general manager, no matter the quarterback, no matter who's it's just kind of mired in that same level of mediocrity, and that turns fans off, and it gets frustrating, and, you know, you don't want to be watching non-competitive football before the Leafs change color.
Yeah, basically that's kind of what it is. So now, yeah, you don't want to necessarily be looking towards the 2026 NFL draft before, you know, the end before Halloween. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we are right now. I mean, they're 0-5 team right now. They're the only winless team in the NFL. And, you know, we knew it wasn't going to be a quick fix. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be a quick fix. I know some Jets fans felt like there might be a team on the cusp of making the playoffs. I had them in 6 wins. Like, I don't know if they're going to win 6 games now, but, yeah, I knew it would be a process there. And, you know, now the rest of the year definitely has to be about evaluation and see who's going to be on this team long term.
Yeah. Like I was kind of in your boat. Like I think I had a high watermark of 7, and I was thinking like in like the 4-5 range, like, but that they would be competitive in most of these games. And really they, outside of the Pittsburgh game, they really haven't. And that is disappointing to watch, and hopefully they can fix things up going forward for the rest of the season, because if they're just going to be boring, people are going to tune out, and then it's like, what are we doing here?
Well, we already see it now. Like, we're already starting to see it now. I think, you know, after 0-5 start, and, you know, we're starting to see people start to tune out a little bit, and fans getting angry and upset, and, you know, and it's not going to get any better. That's why I think they need to beat Denver. It has to beat Denver, because if you go 0-6 back home to MetLife against the Panthers, and it's kind of like a ghost town in MetLife. Like, I mean, that's just probably what it is. I mean, so they got to get a win, you know, get some confidence there, and just kind of, you know, take it from there. Obviously, you're probably not going to make the playoffs, so you just need to try to find a way to get a win.
Absolutely. And, like, one of the things I saw that Aaron Glenn said after the game, and I believe you mentioned a couple minutes ago, saying that it's going to take time, and we're going to go back to work. We're going to get to London on Monday, and then start practicing on Wednesday. And, you know, it feels like he says a lot of the same things after he's, you know, we're going to look into things. We're going to get to work, and eventually, those words are going to have to produce results. Like, do you see that the players are still responding to the message that he and the coaching staff are bringing to them right now, or do you see the players starting to tune out?
No, I think so. I mean, you know, John Sessa was very emotional after the game, too. He was basically saying that, you know, he believes in the organization, and they're going to turn things around, kind of paraphrasing it there. Garrett Wilson said something similar. I just think they're completely shocked. Because, I mean, even, you know, Sauce and Garrett, who have been there, you know, doing a lot of bad times there throughout the course of their career with the Jets, they've never started 0-5 before. And at least the teams, you could say, you know, whatever you want to about the solid Jets teams, but, you know, it might have been mediocre, but they were never, you know, this non-competitive in consecutive, like, in multiple weeks like this, put it that way. So I think it's a big shot to a lot of different people that really bought into what Aaron Glenn is saying. So it's only week 5 going into week 6. So, like, I mean, I still have a lot of football left to go. We'll see if the message continues to, you know, be, you know, resonate throughout the course of the, you know, locker room and the players and everything like that. But right now they are buying in. I can't say if they will, you know, come week 8 or 9 if they're still winless, but right now they're still buying in.
So one of the things I did see, like, you're starting to see Josh Reynolds and Arian Smith get a little bit more involved in the passing game. And we're seeing Mason Taylor start to really emerge as an actual target for Justin Fields to throw to. And I think this would be like the first time since probably Dustin Keller that the Jets have had an actual tight end that you can feel confident in to make plays and, you know, move the ball down the field. Because, you know, those last couple of years when they brought in CJ Uzomah and Tyler Conklin, Conklin wasn't bad, but he's not that kind of game breaker like a Zach Ertz or a Kelce type. And it seems like Mason Taylor can make that jump into a highly productive tight end role that they've been desperately searching for. And especially in the red zone when you want that kind of big target. What have you been seeing the ascension, like when you're looking at them during practices, like the ascension of Mason Taylor at becoming this target for Fields?
Well, we don't watch the practices anymore because, like, during the regular season, like, we only see, like, them basically warm it up. But what I will say is I think he's been impressive the last couple of weeks as far as the games. You know, I thought he played particularly well against the Dolphins there. I believe he had 5 catches in that one. And, you know, I thought he was, you know, did some good things against the, you know, Cowboys too as well. So I think he just, you know, it's never easy, you know, being a rookie anything in the league, more or less a rookie tight end where you're asked to block and also, you know, produce as a pass catcher. But, you know, I think he's starting to come into his own a little bit. And I don't know, you know, what his final stat line is, but I could definitely, you know, I definitely predicted that, you know, he probably would have over 50 catches this year, which I think would be a good start for him, especially considering, you know, the Jets, you know, offensive struggles at times this year.
Yeah, like one of the things I want to see them also develop a legitimate second wide receiver to complement Garrett Wilson in the passing game. And then if they are able to do that, having 3 legitimate pass catchers to work with, whether it be Fields, Tyrod Taylor, or whoever they may bring in 2026, you have a good foundation there to start with to spread out your offense and be more dynamic. And I think looking at Taylor making those steps now is really promising for his future and for future quarterbacks going forward.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you definitely do need to find a second wide receiver. Yeah, you're probably going to be, you have to wait till next year to possibly do that. But yeah, I mean, so far with this year, like at least you got Mason Taylor. I consider Breece a pass catching option because he's going to have to be because they don't have necessarily anybody else that's really, you know, consistent that can, you know, help out Garrett on a regular basis there. So yeah, really Garrett, Breece and, you know, Mason Taylor, at least for this year. And then we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, and losing Braylon Allen for pretty much the rest of the season doesn't help, as he's someone that you can rely on in goal line situations. He had been productive going before the injury, and
yeah.
He's someone who can move the ball a little bit. So hopefully someone like an Isaiah Davis can kind of fill in that role. But we know that Breece is the guy.
I was going to say, you're probably looking for another running back too, potentially in the offseason, because we don't know what Braylon Allen is. And I don't know if you can sit there and say, well, you know, that's offseason, especially if he doesn't come back. Yeah, he's going to be our lead back, but he doesn't have an extensive body of work. So you're probably bringing somebody else in to challenge them or drafting somebody. So that's another hole they probably have to figure out too as well.
Yeah. It's fun to have that conversation when there's still 12 games to go. who wants to be having that?
I'm just being real.
Believe me, I get it, because these are the same conversation I'm having with people too, and I always preface it with like, there's still 12 games to go. I didn't want to be having this conversation now, but here we are.
Yes, I mean, this is the reality of the situation. I mean, it is what it is, but you know, you just hope that, you know, maybe the teams can, you know, show you a little bit, you know, more towards the end of the season there. I think the back half of the schedule has some opportunities for some wins, but, you know, we'll see what kind of mind state this team is in come after the bye week when they play the Browns and moving forward.
All right, well, I'm going to let you go because I'm sure you got a deadline and or wanted to watch the Bills-Patriots game, so I will let you go. Thank you for taking the time tonight. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course, that's Antoine Staley from the New York Daily News. And you can follow him on Twitter or X at Antoine Staley. Highly recommend following. Big fan of his. Love having him on. And hopefully next time I have him on, we're talking where the Jets are playing a little bit better. And it's not just misery and misery loves company like the Jets do. And just once. I just want them to be consistent. In a good way, not consistent in a bad. Is that too much to ask for? And I know the answer is yes. Until things change, that is too much to ask for. So maybe just asking for a win. I'm just going to start small. I'm just going to ask for a win. I think that's a reasonable request. We'll see how long it takes them to actually get to that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another New York team that is just kicking their fans while they're down. The team in pinstripes, backs against the wall, coming back to the Bronx with their two bad days in Toronto. We'll get to that when we come back here on Sports Talk New York.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
And we're back for the second half of Hour 2 of WGBB Sports Talk New York here on WGBB 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Before I start the second half of the show, I gotta shout out my man Brian Greaves behind the glass. Brian, I need my thumbs up. I got my thumbs up. There we go. Can't start that second half of the show without the thumbs up. It feels like something's missing. And, of course, if you guys want to come and talk to me about the Jets, the Giants, the Yankees, whoever, lines are open at 516-623-1240. And you get to talk to Brian and you get to talk to me. So feel free to call in if you want. Line is open. While we're waiting for if anybody does call, as I said at the beginning of the show, New York sports is down bad. Jets lost. Giants lost. Juan Soto's in Cancun. Hopefully he doesn't drink the water. The Mets are out of the, didn't make the playoffs. And then there's the New York Yankees. We're down to the last day of the season fighting for the division title, which honestly I didn't think they were gonna make that after the way they played in most of June, July, and August. They finish tied with the Blue Jays. Blue Jays get the tiebreaker. They get the division. Yankees have to go to the wild card. But they get to host. They have to play the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox have their number all season long. Then the Red Sox take game one. Yankees have had their backs up against the wall. They manage to get game two. And they take game three. Win against Boston. They have to play the Blue Jays. And this is a Blue Jays team that is coming in with some injuries. As their big all-star, Bo Bichette, not playing. Jose Berríos, one of their top pitchers this year, not playing. Chris Bassitt, not pitching. So it's Kevin Gausman and a bunch of guys who I've never heard of. And yet, as I sit here at 9:32 on this Sunday night, the Yankees are one game away from losing and being eliminated from the playoffs. After a 13-7 loss today, which wasn't even as close as that looked, kind of like how the Jets got to within 15 points, but it certainly wasn't as close as it sounds. The Yankees may have scored 7 runs in 2 innings, but they were down 13-2. And that's just unacceptable. They were down 12-0 at one point, which you can't go down 12-0 in a playoff game and expect to make a comeback of that magnitude. That just doesn't happen. So now they are one loss away from elimination in the ALDS, and they got crushed in both games. They lost 10-1 yesterday, 13-7 today. Their starting pitching has been an abomination. And that's been their strength for this back stretch of the season where they were fighting to get back into the division race. Luis Gil, who started yesterday, and I admit I lobbied hard for Luis Gil. I thought Gil should have started game one so that Max Fried could go today on full rest with a potential of either going up 2-0 or tying the series at 1-1, and then you've stolen a game in Toronto going back to New York. And Luis Gil had pitched very well down the stretch for the Yankees since he came back earlier this summer. He had been going at least 5 innings every game. He had been giving up 2 runs or fewer in 9 of his 11 starts of the season. So, like, that's somebody that he's not going to get you 7 like Max Fried. He's not going to give you 7 like Rodon. But if he can get you through 5, he can get you into the 6th, and then you go to your bullpen from there, and it's 2-1 or a tie game or you're up by 1, you'd be happy with that. Unfortunately, he couldn't do that. He struggled. He was giving up a lot of hard hits. Guerrero hit one out, and he was out without getting through the 3rd inning. So the Yankees had to burn through their bullpen. And they kind of held serve for a little while until about the 7th inning, and then things kind of started to go sideways. And that's where we got to 10-1. So they bring out their ace today. And Max Fried, we saw him in game one against Boston, pitch into the 7th. He got taken out when he probably should have been kept in for at least another batter or two. And that's when things started to turn in game one against Boston. Luke Weaver comes in, can't get anybody out, and costs them the game. So you're thinking, okay, this is going to be the stopper. He's going to go out there, he's going to pitch effectively, and hopefully the offense will show up and they'll come out of it with a win. tied at one. Didn't exactly go as planned, as Max Fried couldn't get out of the fourth inning, and he was pulled for Will Warren after giving up quite a few runs. Was very ineffective. He was getting hit all over the field, and by the time things started to really unravel in the fourth, Vlad Guerrero comes up, hits a grand slam. It's 9-0, and at that point, the game is pretty much over, as Fried gets tagged for 7 earned runs on 8 hits, only struck out 1. And like that's not what you need from your ace. It happens. Every pitcher has a bad day. But you don't want your bad days to happen in what really amounts to a must-win game in the playoffs. Like, if you're going to pitch like that, you do that in April. You do that in May. You don't do that in September, and you sure as hell don't do that in October. That's not what you just paid this guy hundreds of millions of dollars to come to your team and do. And that's not to completely absolve the offense, because, yeah, like, if you're going to give up 13 runs as a pitching staff, you deserve to lose. But the offense is not absolved of this either. They had many opportunities in yesterday's game to tack runs on both Kevin Gausman and the Blue Jays bullpen that they failed to do, and that's ultimately what did them in, even before the bullpen faltered in the middle innings. When you have bases loaded and you only get one run, that's a problem. And this is not like we're talking that they were facing some Hall of Fame pitcher. I can understand if you struggle to get hits against a guy like Gerrit Cole, like when they faced him against the Astros in 2017. I can understand when you struggle against a guy like Garrett Crochet, who is going to probably finish second in the Cy Young this year. I get it when you don't hit against Justin Verlander, who is a Hall of Fame pitcher and is one of the best pitchers of a generation. But if you're telling me that you can't get hits against Kevin Gausman, and that's I should be fair, Kevin Gausman is a major league pitcher, and he clearly can get people out, otherwise he wouldn't be the ace of this staff. But he is not on that elite level of a guy like a prime Justin Verlander or a Crochet, or Chris Sale. Like those guys are the best of the best. And Kevin Gausman, while good, is not them. And the Yankees hitters, as good as they are, should be able to hit him. Especially when you have a guy who will be either the MVP or finish a close second in Aaron Judge. A guy who's done incredibly well in the playoffs in Giancarlo Stanton. And a hitter like Cody Bellinger, who's had a very good season and has, for the most part, come up in clutch moments when you need him to do so. So they struggled against Gausman yesterday. And then today, they're facing a guy named Trey Yesavage. And then if you're sitting there thinking, who is that guy? I said the same thing. I never heard of him. I was thinking, oh, yeah, Randy Savage. And it's like, no, it's Trey Savage. I don't know who this guy is. So I go to Baseball Reference. I go look him up. He's 22. He's made 3 starts in his major league career. So he's making his 4th MLB start today, his first playoff start, and he's going up against the Yankees. And the Yankees usually do very well against rookies. Nobody gave you Savage that message, because in 5 1/3 innings today, he struck out 11. That is a phenomenal playoff debut. And like we saw Cam Schlittler do that on Thursday against the Red Sox in his playoff debut, strikes out 11 in 8 innings. And you're thinking, oh, that's really good. And then this guy does that in 5 1/3. So you're talking 16 outs, and he struck out 11 of them. And to think if his pitch count probably hadn't been so high, he could have made a run at 15 strikeouts. But that therein lies the problem with strikeouts is that it runs up your pitch count because, you know, you're three strikes out, but you probably threw a couple balls in there. So let's call it five, six pitches per bat. You're looking at like 70 pitches just for the strikeouts alone. And then, you know, all of the rest of your outs, but that probably puts you up to 100. And then that's it. But to not be able to make any kind of dent against a guy making his playoff debut and only three starts, that's just unacceptable if you're the New York Yankees. That's a guy you have to hit. And watching that game, I was already mad because the Jets had played so poorly. And then I'm watching this guy throw splitter after splitter after splitter that they are just swinging over every time, and it's in the dirt. And I'm thinking, you're watching this from the dugout. How do you not realize that every single time he's going to this splitter on two strike counts, and he's throwing it in the dirt, and you are swinging over it every single time? To me, that's just a bad hitting approach, because at a certain point, you'd be like, oh, maybe I should stop doing this. I struck out on this pitch the last time, and oh, I have two strikes now. Maybe I should not swing at this pitch, because he's going to throw it in the dirt to try to get me to chase, and I should not indulge him. And yet, time after time after time, you watch Aaron Judge do it, you watch Stanton do it, you watch Grisham do it, and it just got so infuriating to watch them just swing over these pitches over and over and over again. And that's where you're gonna get burned every single time. And then, oh, on top of that, you fell behind 9-0. So that's just a recipe for not winning baseball. And now, after two games, you're down to one last shot. And you're gonna need Carlos Rodon to really find it and do exactly as he did on Wednesday against the Boston Red Sox, and do exactly the same thing against the Toronto Blue Jays. Get them seven innings of one or two runs. The Yankees got to get some hits, and they got to put some runs up on the board. And that's we've seen the Yankees do this before. They've come back from 2-0 deficits in these divisional series. We saw it in 2001 against the Oakland A's. They lost the first two games, went to Oakland, won games 3 and 4, and that's where we saw the Derek Jeter flip play to take out Jeremy Giambi, and then came back to Yankee Stadium in game 5 and won there. We saw it in 2017 against the Cleveland Indians, now the Guardians. They fell behind 2-0 in Cleveland. They come back to New York. They win game 3, 1-0. They win game 4 after a cavalcade of errors. I was actually at that game. It was a lot of fun. It was the first playoff baseball game I'd ever been to. And when Aaron Judge hit the double into left field in like the fourth inning, which really helped break the game open because Lindor and Jose Ramirez just could not get hands on the ball, the place went bananas. So the Yankees can do this. It's feasible. It's a lot. This time it's a much tougher opponent, because the Blue Jays have had the Yankees number this season. And that's why these games were being played in Toronto rather than in New York. Because I think it was like 8-5 this year that the Blue Jays beat the Yankees. And that included a 4-game sweep in Toronto that basically nailed it down for them. And it just went to show you that this Blue Jays team is not afraid of the Yankees. And really, nobody's afraid of the Yankees anymore. Because it's like they haven't won since 2009. They don't have like that same fearsome lineup outside of Aaron Judge. Like they have good players. But it's not, you're running down that line and it's Jeter, then Bernie, then O'Neill, then Tino, and like all of them are hitting 280, 290, and hitting 25, 30 home runs, and they're all driving in 100 runs. That's not the lineup that's going out there. You're seeing a team that the top of the lineup is good. You know, when you have Grisham, Judge, Bellinger, Stanton, Rice. After that, it gets a little dicey because Chisholm is hot and cold. Volpe did not have a good season this year. Austin Wells didn't have a good season this year. Ryan McMahon, not much of a hitter. He has a little bit of pop in his bat, but how much of that was aided by the fact that he played in Colorado for pretty much his entire career? Then, you know, off the bench, you got a guy like Caballero who's not gonna drive in runs, but when he gets on base, he's a threat. You got a guy like Amed Rosario who's great against lefties, but really, when you have that many right-handed pitchers in the league, what does that do for you? Same thing with Paul Goldschmidt. We saw this year that he is not the player that he's not his MVP self. But that comes with time. I mean, he is 38 years old. He's got more years of his career behind him than in front of him. And he's a platoon guy now. He's a guy you play against left-handed pitching, which is why he was in the lineup in game one against Boston. Because they were playing the lefty Crochet. They thought, okay, let's play the matchup and put Goldschmidt in there. I think Ben Rice then proved in game two why his bat needs to be in the lineup every single night now. And that's a decision that I don't want to say it should have been common sense that use the guys that got you there, but use the guys that got you there. Like, a guy like Ben Rice, he was one of the more consistent players down the stretch for this Yankee squad that got as close as they did to hosting this playoff series. And you're not going to put him in the lineup just because he's a left-handed pitcher? That to me shows that the coaching staff and the front office didn't look at things properly. And that's why I think I can't even say this is why they're in this hole now, because that's just on the fact that the Yankees couldn't get anybody out. And all of a sudden, Vlad Guerrero Jr. looks like Vlad Guerrero Sr. and just hitting home runs all over the place. And this is a guy who did not have a good season this year. He got his $500 million contract and had a very down year for him. Like we've seen this guy hit 35-plus home runs, and this year, it's, I don't know what happened, but this was not the same Vlad Guerrero Jr. until the playoffs, and now he's clubbing pitches all over the place. And I think I saw something, he was like going into the second at bat when he did hit the second home run, the grand slam, that he was 6-for-7 in this series, where the rest of the Yankees hitters were combined 6-for-44. So just on his own, Vlad Guerrero was out hitting the entire Yankee organization in the series, which is unbelievable when you think about it. And I saw a quote after today's game from Gary Phillips on X, the Daily News reporter for the Yankees, from Aaron Boone. Like, there's been a lot of weird things this is the quote from Boone. There's been a lot of weird things that have happened in baseball this year. This wouldn't be the weirdest, us rallying. We'll come ready to go Tuesday, expect to win, and look to win again, and push it back here. So he's already looking ahead to Tuesday night when they'll play game three in the Bronx. And I gotta admit, I like the attitude. You know, you expect to come back to Toronto in 4 days and play a winner-take-all game five. I respect that. I like that. Now prove it to me. Go out there and win on Tuesday. Make the right decisions. Beat the hell out of the Blue Jays. I mean, like, I would love nothing more than to see the Yankees win this game 13-0. Actually, I take that back. I don't want them to do that. because I fully believe in the law of averages. Like, win this game, like, 5-2. Like, because when you score a lot of runs, usually the next day, you don't. I say that as the Blue Jays have scored 23 runs in two games. But since I do believe in the law of averages, you know, save yourself some runs for the next day. So try to win, like, 5-2, 6-3, and then go out and win game 4, 7-1. You know, put the Blue Jays on notice that you're not going to go away and that we can hang with you. Because the team, as constructed, should be able to do so. And now you'll have a day off to kind of, for the pitching staff to get their arms back together. Rodon will get an extra day of rest, so he will be on full rest for game 3. And since they haven't used, they didn't have to use like all their top relievers today, guys like David Bednar and Devin Williams, like they got an extra day of rest to let their arms heal after playing in all three games against Boston. But one of the biggest things I need to see the MVP start contributing. And if you look at his numbers through the playoffs, you would say, oh, but Andy, he's hitting .444. His on-base percentage is over .500. And that's all well and good. But he also has only 2 RBIs. He has no home runs. This is a guy who hit over 50 home runs this year. Drove in well over 100 runs. Scored over 100 runs. This guy who hit .330 and had another prodigious offensive season. And if not for the fact that Cal Raleigh hit .60 as a catcher, and a switch hitting catcher at that, Aaron Judge would be the unanimous MVP. But just like Alex Rodriguez always had that problem of not performing in the playoffs, Aaron Judge does the same thing. You know, you can hit .440 all you want, but if you're not driving in runs, it doesn't matter. Because that's a guy that you pay a lot of money to drive in runs, to hit the ball over the fence. And every October, we wait for him to do that, and then he doesn't. And then we get upset that this is the guy that from April to September 28th, this is the greatest player on earth. This is the guy who's going to lead them to the promised land. And then as soon as you flip the calendar to October, it's a completely different person. So, yeah, while he's hitting and he's putting the ball in play and he's getting on base, he's not doing it in the moments that you need him to do it. Even if he hits a solo shot, at least that's a run. If he hits a single with nobody on, okay, great. Like, we kept him in the ballpark. That's, like, if I'm the Toronto Blue Jays, I'm considering that a win. He came up with the bases loaded and struck out. That's not the guy you need striking. You don't need a guy like that striking out with the bases loaded in a playoff game. That's the guy you want hitting the ball into the gap, driving in all three runs, and that could have been the difference in game 1, because things get changed based on the situation of the game. If Aaron Judge hits a 3-run double, you know, you're not bringing in, like, you may not bring in Tim Hill in that game, and you might bring in Fernando Cruz instead, or you might go to Devin Williams earlier. Because now you're in the lead, and you want to win this game. And, like, you can't win without your best player contributing in these run-scoring opportunities. Because if you're going to leave a small village on the base pass every time you come up to the plate, eventually, that's a problem. And it will continue to be a problem until he proves it isn't. And like I said, like just like A-Rod. A-Rod was struggling in the playoffs until 2009, and then he had his defining playoff run. Aaron Judge needs that defining playoff run. And if the Yankees want to get to the World Series and win the World Series, they're going to need number 99 to be the lightning rod that carries them there. Because Juan Soto's not in the building this time. Like, Juan Soto had a fantastic playoffs last year, and he was one of the biggest contributors to the Yankees getting to the World Series as Judge struggled. Now, Stanton hasn't really gotten his back going in the playoffs yet. So now, the microscope is even further on Aaron Judge to produce. And if they lose on Tuesday and he struggles yet again, those calls of what Aaron Judge's legacy is going to be are going to be much, much louder. So for his sake and for the Yankees' sake, he better hit one out on Tuesday night. That is just about going to do it for me here tonight. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank my man Brian Graves behind the glass for putting us up on the air. Of course, I want to thank Antoine Staley for joining me tonight from the Daily News to discuss the Jets. And I'll be on again soon. I don't know when, but hopefully we'll have some more fun things to talk about. Like, you know, maybe the Jets and Giants win. Maybe the Yankees will have won a World Series. The Knicks will have done something good. Rangers will be playing well. I guess we'll see. But until then, I'm Andy Sukoff. Have a good night, everyone.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.